Well, I mean, I'm sure that rules for the rest of the people don't apply to him because he's a special person. But I think North Korea is probably one of the more paranoid, suspicious countries in the world today, unfortunately. And if you're very suspicious and paranoid, you don't want uncontrolled conversations with your citizens, with each other, and with the outside world. You have to realize, geologically, they're right next to South Korea. So it's probably not too difficult if you have an amateur radio rig to set up some kind of scheme between North and South. And I don't think Kim Jong-un would particularly like that. So, you know, usually they silence everyone. I mean, even the United States, the FCC disallowed the use of amateur radio operators, their radio, during World War II. They would have government people come by and put little seals on it and say, you know, leave it exactly where it is. Don't break the seal. Don't turn it on. Don't transmit. Don't receive. Don't touch the thing. And we may come, we may not come. But if we do come and we find that you've broken the seal, we're going to arrest you. So a lot of hams didn't operate all throughout World War II until they could break their seal and go back to it. So if we did that for World War II, I'm sure North Korea would do it for anything.
KG2RY. Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's the same in a lot of places. And I say that the history of photography, you know, where photojournalism was really photo illustration. Things were created and people were led to believe it was something when it might have been something else.
Well, I don't know what you're alluding to, but there was a lot of fakery that went on even long before there was things like Photoshop. Some photographers grew very talented at superimposing double images and producing images that they said were angels or whatever, the ectoplasm for seances and such. So almost as soon as photography was invented, people learned to game photography.
Of course, I agree with you. You know, if you look at the photography, or so-called photography, from the Spanish Civil War, you know, things were, they were, how to say, like, theatrical. They were set up. And people believed it, they didn't know, but we look back in time, you know, that was the news story for the day.
Well, you know, I mean, as I got older, the more I kind of discovered that a lot of things I sort of peripherally took for granted were grifts. There's just so many different grifts going on, so many different people trying to milk innocent people of their money. You know, a fool and his money is easily parted, unfortunately, and there's just so many people who spend so many hours of their lives concocting schemes to get your money and my money for silly, stupid things. You see all kinds of ads for stuff that you know can't possibly exist, and they don't exist. But nevertheless, there are guys out there telling you to give them your money, and they'll ship it off to you.
Yeah, and also more in the modern day with digital technology, now you can do photo retouching. You can cut and paste. You can extract certain elements of a picture, put them into another picture seamlessly, you know, right on the internet with the help of artificial intelligence and whatever pictures you carry with you. So, yeah, and so, you know, a picture of so-and-so, you know, with another person could be constructed and you know, I guess, how to say, it has more, maybe less value, and what is a belief about it?
Well, ultimately, it's easier to fool a person than convince a person that he's been fooled. So if he wants to believe, he's really going to hold on for dear life. There's nothing you can fundamentally do to break his belief if it's there, unfortunately. And the artificial intelligence image simulators and creators are still not thankfully perfect. They are flawed. They still give you people with six fingers or a hand coming out of the ground. They seem to have problems with fingers and hands. But eventually these things will be perfected, and then we'll have more problems. We'll never be able to believe anything but our eyes in real time. And yet there are con artists out there who are sort of telling you, don't believe your lying eyes, you believe me, because I'm the only one who's going to tell you the truth. And because you unfortunately believe in those con guys, you believe that your eyes are lying to you and they're telling you the truth. You know, that's been the way of manipulating people since the dawn of time.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on the social media. I look at all the pictures, you know, and, you know, you really can see if something is real or not, or possibly real, possibly not real. And, you know, I was able to make a photograph right on the internet with a window in a browser with a certain manufacturer of software, and using AI, you know, I was able to take a picture of me and put it into another picture like it was a selfie, you know, I'm in the selfie, you know, and how perfectly it worked and how amazing, you know, but you realize that it's so easy to do it, you know, and is it so convincing, you know, in places where it has to be?
It depends upon the person that you show it to. You could show a person the entire recorded video of the moon landing and walking on the moon, and they will talk to you about it was done in a Hollywood studio, and it's a lie, and no one's visited the moon, and the Earth is flat, et cetera, et cetera. So even if you have legitimate films but long before it was able to be faked, there are some people who wouldn't believe it even though you had that. So it depends upon the person you're trying to convince. If they reasonably think that it's a possibility, you might be able to do it. If for whatever reason they think that the world is flat, then no, there's no proof. Grabbing them, putting them in a rocket, and flinging them to the moon, they probably would tell you that you just drugged them, because I guess they saw that type of stuff on Mission Impossible when they were children. So, again, it depends upon the individual you're trying to convince. Some people require an infinite amount of proof, and others just require next to nothing.
Yeah, but when I see photojournalism here, photojournalism there, you know, there is potential that it is fake, and there isn't any significant value where it needs to be. So if a person is happy with a world filled with this kind of doubt, you know, then it's really hard to accomplish the goals. I think that people can do more if they just took the picture, whichever in the frame, and that's the picture. You know, there are people who do that, and some great photographers do that. I don't know about photojournalism, I didn't study it, but I know a little bit about the history of photography, and yeah, especially today with AI and Photoshop.
Yeah, I mean, photographers have been photoshopping their images, tweaking them, adjusting them for more than 20 years. I mean, anything that showed up on magazines and such has by the very nature of the industry gone through a quick tune-up with something like Photoshop, which has been around for a long, long time to, you know, counting today. You know, so, I mean, nothing is 100% real, and unfortunately, a lot of people kind of judge themselves based upon what they see in photographs of other people. So, you know, in magazine covers, no model has a blemish because the blemishes are removed. But unfortunately, the average teenage girl doesn't know that, and so they drive themselves insane trying to look like the woman that was photoshopped on the cover of a magazine. And it leads a little bit more to the general dislike of their of people's lives and the problems they have kind of dealing with themselves and others. So it's unfortunately part of the aspect of technology. Technology gives us tools, and we could use them or we could misuse them. And more often than not, we find a way to misuse them.
QSL, KG2R1. Well, you know, there's some person who got an iPhone 16, and she said, oh, I have this very special photo program where I can remove things from the picture. I can remove a person. I can remove anything I don't want in there. I said, well, that's great. You know, we used to do that in Photoshop, Photoshop 1 in 1992. But, you know, it was like her biggest thrill, and she can do it on her phone.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen a trick before, and the fact you can do it, and you, yeah, theoretically, if you spent a lot of time and effort, you could do it with Photoshop 1. But nowadays, all you really have to do is make a couple of menu selections and do one click, and the rest the software does, which is not what 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 did. It was a lot more task intensive.
But in order to achieve a certain goal, a fake picture, you know, there is, how to say, integrity. It lacks the integrity for the purpose, you know, and people making it so cheap and so fake.
Yeah, well, some people don't really care about integrity. Unfortunately, you doubled with someone else. The person who was talking at the same time that David was talking, what would you like to say?
KD2VHD, question.
Yes, Jim.
A very intriguing topic of altering photographs and adapting what was being portrayed. And that, I assume, has gone on back to early photography, Civil War era in our country. But while doctoring photographs in that time period left artifacts that seemed to be able to be discovered by sharp people in that trade, in the digital era, doesn't altering photographs leave lots of metadata and digital artifacts that are fairly easy to discover by people who actually investigate them? Just to think about this technically, back to that.
Yeah, I mean, metadata can be erased, and you can fake metadata. If you're smart enough to know that it exists, there's lots of editing software that can change metadata. To kind of smooth over contrast artifacts and unnatural deviations in the image, if you have a very good eye and a lot of time, you should be able to accomplish that. So it's more a matter of expertise and the amount of time that you take. You could make a near-perfect counterfeit, but it's far easier to make a crappy counterfeit, and it's exceedingly easy to just forget to do anything about the old metadata that almost screws up everything. But and yet, you know, we all kind of hear the news and we all know metadata. And, you know, if you could just Google it, it tells you kind of how to extract the metadata from different photography software. So it's quite doable if you just care enough to do it.
Thanks for the reply.
You're welcome. Once again, someone doubled with Jim. So the person that doubled with Jim, would you like to try again?
Good evening. My apologies. This is Kilo 2 November Delta X-ray, K2NDX, Paul, Bronx, New York.
Hello, Paul. Is there anything I can do for you tonight?
No, negative. I just wanted to check in, say hello, and show my support.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. We're here every Sunday night, 8 to 11. And feel free, come by if you have something to report or if you have a question to ask or you just like to roll around the topic, consider doing it here on Technical Net.
Roger, if I didn't have to be in early, I do have a topic regarding the Schumann resonance that I wanted to pick your guys' brains about, because I know you all are very intelligent and have good answers as well as scientific data, but unfortunately I'm going to have to reserve that inquiry for another night. But just wanted to say hello, all the best to you guys, send them my best, and you have a good evening and a good week. 7-3, I will be clear, and take care, be well, K2NDX, clear.
Likewise, Paul, 73, have a good week. Tonight we don't have our expert in Schumann resonance is West N2XJN. He frequently attends these technical nets, and he's very, very interested in Schumann resonances.
Roger. Yeah, and there's a lot of data and a lot of conspiracy, so it's a lot to siphon through, but I don't want to hold it up. Again, thank you for picking me up. I apologize for the doubling, and take care. K2NDX, Kilo 2, November Delta X-ray, 7-3, and clear.
Okie doke. No problem, Paul. Have a good drive, and be well, and we'll hopefully talk to you down the line. Well, David, you know, it's already 10:25, so I think it's really time for the SpaceNet report. I thank you for participating tonight, and we'll chat again in future technical nets, okay?
Thank you, Roy. Nice talking to you again. 73 for now. This is KG2RY.
Okie doke. This is AC2GS, and this part of the technical net is done. I now bring you WS2N, Paul, with the SpaceNet report.
AC2GS, WS2N, SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And very good topics throughout the whole night. And, yeah, a few things that came up this week anyway that I found interesting. One is the Europa Clipper. Europa Clipper is a very large spacecraft that was launched last October. And it was launched by Falcon Heavy rocket. So it's a very heavy vehicle. It's got solar arrays, maybe about the size of a tennis court. And the idea of the mission is to go out to one of the moons of Jupiter, investigate the ice on Europa. And one of the investigations they'd like to do is find out what's below that ice. You know, how deep is that ice? Is there a theory that there's a lot of actual liquid water deep down under, you know, miles under under the ice, and they'd like to more about it. And your rubber clipper was designed many years ago, and it's on the way. They just ran a test, you know, to try to figure out how deep that ice is, and maybe that, you know, and how deep the water would be. They have a radar on board your rubber clipper, and they wanted to test it out. They had the opportunity because right now, presently, it's actually passing Mars, and you know, you still got a couple years before it actually gets to Europa, to one of the moons of Jupiter. And the spacecraft has this radar that's called Reason on it, you know, and it, these are all acronyms, you know. And in this case, it has to do with the radar that's looking under the ocean. They call it the Radar for Europa Assessment and Sounding Ocean to Near Surface. So they like to give these things names. Essentially, it's a radar. But the frequencies that it's using is, you know, pretty much HF. And they needed dipoles to transmit. They use HF. It's a good frequency to actually penetrate ice. And the idea is to go down as far as they can. And they know that that would work, but to do that, the dipoles had to be long. They're 58 feet long in this case. They were telescoped out when it first went into orbit around Earth before it finally started to push it all the way to Jupiter. So the 60 foot long dipoles. To do that, it's actually suspended from the solar arrays. And again, the solar arrays are as big as a tennis court. So they passed Mars. They transmitted down into the surface of Mars, see what kind of response that they got back, and everything worked 100%. This way, they know when they get there. It will work, so it's a test run of this Reason system. So I thought I'd bring that up, update you on the Europa Clip flight. It won't get there for, like I said, a couple of years, but hopefully we'll still be around when they do, and we'll be able to report on how it works. It flew around 3,000 miles to around 500 miles above the surface of Mars. And, you know, on its way to Europa. When it gets to Europa, it's really going to go close. It's going to go as close as 16 miles above the surface of the moon. And it's going to do this. Well, they're hoping for 43 orbits around Jupiter. So it takes an extremely long time. It's going to be a highly elliptical orbit around Jupiter. The reason they do that is there's a very high radiation level near the planet, and especially near the moon Europa. So it can't last long if it stay there. So what they'll do is they'll orbit Jupiter, come very close to the moon. It'll do its thing. It'll transfer down through the ice. And then when it gets away from it, away from that moon, away from the radiation, it'll transmit all the data back to Earth. And they'll do this over and over again. And we'll see. So that's the update on Europa Clipper. Yeah, and by the way, I was going to say a few other things, but like I said, we got plenty of time before that work, that spacecraft gets out there. You know, I was going to talk about the engines and, you know, the thrusters. But, you know, we'll do this again. A couple of other things I wanted to talk about, a couple of manned launches took place. A couple of days ago, you had a launch of Falcon 9 with a crew of four going to the International Space Station. They had a woman commander and a crew. I've brought these people up before. And, you know, what was I going to say? There's also another flight that took off, Blue Origin. So two manned missions. Blue Origin flight was today. That left Texas for a short flight, a suborbital flight with six people on board. So now you have six people today. The day before you had four people actually going to orbit. So a total of 10 for one day. For the year, the amount of people have flown to space, you know, is increasing. I think they're up to now 40, and we're just past the halfway mark of the year, so it's setting a record of the amount of human beings entered space. Any comments? And nothing heard. So, yeah, here's a topic I was going to cover last week, and then we got to it. It's about an asteroid that is predicted to hit the moon, but it's like 5% possibility. But it's a big asteroid. It's around 200 feet in diameter. They're actually calling it a city killer asteroid. That's because it did hit the Earth. Near a city, you know, it could wipe out a city. You know, when they slam through the atmosphere at, you know, these 40,000 mile an hour speeds. But this one, is not going to hit the Earth. It could hit the moon in the year of 2032. So, probably 7 years from now. They actually have a date, December 22nd. We'll look forward to that. It would create a crater, probably the size of the Arizona crater. You know, maybe a quarter of a mile or half a mile in diameter, is possible, they said. But, you know, it would be visible with plenty of spacecraft and telescopes. They'll monitor as time goes by. They call it YR4. That's the name of the asteroid. So we'll see. You know, it's been like, you know, maybe a million years or so before you had another impact of the moon that big. So anyway, they discovered this thing using the Atlas telescope in Chile. Couple of the other asteroids, a couple of the other telescopes saw the asteroids as well. So we'll see. You know, they had one that hit Russia in 1908, near Siberia, and it wiped out thousands of trees. And they said that one was only around 65 feet in diameter. This is 200 feet. So that would be do a lot of damage if it actually entered the atmosphere. Again, only 5% chance of hitting the moon, but, you know, they'll follow. Any comments? Okay, here's a story I've been following for many, many weeks. The Eris rocket launch from Australia. that took place got a couple of maybe a couple hundred feet above the above where it took off from, and it slowly moved sideways, and one of the four engines on the booster failed, and the thing exploded. And it was important for Australia to do this, to get this thing into orbit. It would have been first developed in Australia and launched from Australia. That would have made it to orbit. They did launch a rocket back in the 1970s that made it to orbit, but that was built by, actually most of it was built by us. They sent the Redstone rocket over there, and that was the only successful launch. So they're hoping to develop the Eris rocket. Hopefully they can actually make them larger in the future. They have really outrageous plans, creating Eris heavy rockets, and eventually they plan on building the Eris rocket so big you could actually put a crew on board. So Australia has big plans. It might be 10, 20 years away, but they got to start somewhere. They're using a hybrid type of fuel. So it's like a mixture of the material a pencil is made out of, like a rubber. And then they use nitrogen tetroxide for the oxidizer. And they can control the thrust. It's very, very good with that mixture. And when the vehicle crashed, it doesn't have this outrageous explosion that some of all other rockets would normally have. So there really isn't that much damage to the infrastructure, even though it came right back down on the pad. So I expect probably within a couple of months to try again to launch another Eris rocket. We'll see. The more the merrier. There's a lot of rocket companies now. It's very hard to keep up with the amount of companies that are out there. But some of them are more successful than others. Yeah, really, I have only three big heavy lift companies, and one foreign one. China is one. They have a heavy lift vehicle. But for us and for Europe has the Ariane 5 rocket, which is now called the Ariane 6. They upgraded that, And then they have other heavy lift vehicles, of course. SpaceX with their Falcon 9 Heavy, and now eventually the Starship that's still in the development. They just can't get this thing into orbit. Got my fingers crossed with that. Hope they make it someday. And Blue Origin with New Glenn, that successfully made it to orbit. And probably the most competent one with the least amount of failures is United Launch Alliance, run by Tory Bruno, CEO. He's tells great stories. He's very good at what he does. Yeah, he's been around quite a few years, and if you catch him on YouTube or something like that, it's worth listening to him. All the predictions and things he's going to be doing with. Now, especially with the Vulcan rocket. In fact, there's infrastructure being built right now in California. The Vulcan rocket is the new rocket that that they've launched twice, and they plan on launching on a regular basis. You might see a dozen or more launches probably by next year of Vulcan, and it replaces the Atlas V, it replaces Delta 4 and the Delta 4 Heavy, which United Launch Alliance was launching for decades. And now they have the Vulcan rocket, liquid methane, liquid oxygen. And two flights so far, you know, without any failures. So I guess they have a 100% record. And we'll see how it goes. You know, they'll have launches now in California, in Florida. So, I mean, they have, I think there's 20 or so, correction, around 30 or so launches that are planned for the Kuiper satellite, which they've already launched two payloads of Kuiper satellites into orbit. They use the Atlas V rocket, because that's not retired yet. There's, I think, 5 more launches with the Atlas V that they will be doing for Amazon with the Kuiper broadband satellites. And they have over 30 launches planned with Vulcan for now. The idea is to put 3,230 of these satellites into orbit. Right now there's, I think, 70 of them now. SpaceX launched 1 of 4 of them, and 2 launches by Atlas V. So I think there's like 74 up there. And the deal is they want to get at least half of them in orbit by like the end of next year. And this way they can have an operational broadband system to compete with SpaceX Stalling system. Any comments to that? WS2M. Okay. Busy couple of days anyway. At least the humidity went down. I was able to do a couple of things with my dipole. And there's good antenna weather out there for the next couple of days as well. There's a mission coming up early next year, sometime in 2026. And it's a moon landing mission by Blue Ghost, by the Blue Ghost spacecraft. Built by Firefly, and it's a company that's already had a successful moon landing, 100%. Their goal was this year to land a vehicle on the moon and have it last for two weeks, 14 days. Each lunar day is 14 days, Earth days long. And they have 14 nights. So that was their goal. And that's exactly what they did. Telemetry kept coming back right up until the end. In fact, they wanted to go around 5 hours into the lunar night. And they knew by that time the would fail. And sure enough, that's what happened. Blue Ghost, next mission, again, this is by Firefly.
It would like SCP.
Extend that night time all the way to, 14 days. And then have 14 days of daylight, recharge batteries, and keep going like that. Plan on putting things in that inside. The first one that they plan on doing, they have a contract with Brookhaven National Lab, Long Island. And they're working in conjunction with Berkeley in California and a couple of others on building a radio astronomy antenna that they plan on putting on top of the Blue Ghost lander. The idea is to land the Blue Ghost on the far side of the moon. The far side of the moon has 14 days of daylight, 14 days of night. Temperatures swing almost 500 degrees from, you know, from daytime to nighttime. So
KD2SCP, KD2SCP.
You do an astronomy mission, you go always to put it on a far side of the moon. This way, it doesn't, you know, if you're there, you don't pick up any of the signals from Earth. The moon blocks it out. I mean, nothing. You don't even hear GPS signals. You know, you're behind the moon, which is perfect for radio astronomy. These antennas, they look like they're helical antennas that they're building. They're also building the electronics to handle all this. Once it lands, it will extend the antennas. And then the whole spacecraft itself will go through some scientific research and then eventually shut itself down completely. But what will still be alive will be the astronomy portion of that vehicle. It's got its own 7,000 amp hour, no, it wasn't correct, 7,000 watt hour battery attached to this thing. It was large, roughly 100-pound battery. Will have enough juice in it to supply heat into the vehicle and to keep it alive when it's on the far side of the moon in darkness. You know, and then they'll be able to do its scientific work and then transmit its signals back to Earth. Of course, they can't transmit directly because they're on the far side of the moon. So this whole mission requires a satellite in position, where the signal will be able to hit the satellite, and you'll have there'll be another repeater in the sky, transmit back to Earth. This also will be controlled from Earth too. It's not an autonomous type of deal. So mission control will be able to make adjustments. The antennas themselves will be able to rotate and move. They can position them in whatever way they'd like to get the best signal. They plan on going way back in time, looking at the beginning of right after the Big Bang, before there was galaxies, before there were stars, and they plan on looking that far back. And this is only a preliminary test flight, really. If this all works out with the batteries and the heaters, and it, by the way, when the sun's out, it gets hot up there. So they actually have to control the heat, and they have these, they call them heat pipes, that bring the heat away from the vehicle during lunar daytime. So all of these things will be tested out, the heat pipes, the big batteries, different heaters that they have on board to keep it operating, the electronics. And someday in the future, this is a scientist's dream. What they want to do is, create an antenna, maybe even bigger than Arecibo, that big, 1,000-foot diameter type of dish. To do that, they would actually use a big crater on the far side of the moon. So craters are, kind of shaped like a big dish. So the goal would be to send up a bunch of rovers, and you could have like rovers on one side of the crater, and then you have the rovers pull down wires from the one sitting on top of the crater, and have them all the way down to the bottom of the crater, and meet other wires coming down from the other side, and somehow eventually connect them. And you could actually create, a dish bigger than Arecibo on the other side of the moon. Can you imagine? That would be great. Okay. Okay, nothing heard. Looks like a couple of months, they plan on launching another X-37B space plane from the United States. This thing has gone up five times before, starting around 2011. They go up, the early ones went up for like 300 days, and they started going up for like a year, and then now 2 years. Last one was almost 3 years. They go up for extremely long periods of time, and they look like a small plane. They orbit the Earth, do their thing. It's for the Department of Defense, so it's probably doing a lot of spy work. But when it's done, by the way, this is built by Boeing. It pulls up its solar panels. It has a little bay that opens up. The bay will close, lock tight, and they fly back. Originally, they used to fly and land in California, and recently they bring these space planes back to Florida, which makes it very convenient. If they want to get it ready and launch from Florida, they can. So we're following the X-37B. It'll launch on a Falcon 9. They enclose it in the fairings, so you don't see it when it's enclosed. Looks like a regular rocket going up, but once the fairings are gone, X-30 goes on its own for a couple of years, and eventually comes back and lands. Again, not one failure. I think they're up to the sixth mission. Anyway, coming up to the top of the hour, so I think I'll close out this portion of the net. We'll turn it back to Roy. I'd like to remind you that tomorrow we have the Line Walk Club Infonet that comes on at 8:30. That's always followed by Swap and Shop, and that's always followed by Radio Newsline. Find out all the amateur radio news, not only from this country, but around the world. Roy, over to you, AC2GS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report, for the TechNet.
Okay, this is AC2GS, and thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially do. And I appreciate everyone's participation tonight, even though, unfortunately, the Middle Island repeater was down and out. Hopefully, they'll have it fixed by tomorrow, and things will be fine next Sunday night. So thanks again for everyone who joined us, and please try to join us next Sunday when we do this all over again. I leave you with the words of some wise men, one being Dick K2RIW. He advised everyone at the end of his technical nets to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but don't open it wide enough that your brain falls out. You're going to need it one of these days. Anyway, stay safe, be well, and please come back next Sunday when we do this again. This is AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
Complete. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
FlyMark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
FlyMark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. The W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
FlyMark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.